The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Indicate to you when you signed Mike where they would draft a quarterback. Was that ever discussed?
They didn't. I knew coming into the situation, just even coming from here from last year, wherever I was going to go, I was going to have to come in, compete, earn the trust of my teammates, and get back onto the field with hard work and my talent and just being a leader on this team. So we didn't have those conversations, but I knew it was a possibility coming wherever I would go next.
Mitchell Trubisky. He wasn't told that the Steelers would draft a quarterback, and that's not how it works. I mean, why would you want to tell? Look, you sign him, you give him a contract. Contract is what it is. You come in and you compete, and he's sufficiently self-aware of his situation
exactly.
To know that he wasn't 100% safe. It wasn't like Russell Wilson.
Right.
Like, I mean, not that the Broncos had a first-round pick, but if they did, it's not like they're going to take a quarterback in round one. They got Russell Wilson, although they did take Brock Osweiler in round two the year they got Peyton Manning, which is so weird in hindsight, especially since they could have had Russell Wilson. But I digress. And there is an irony here, Chris, because the Bears signed Mike Glennon, and he was the starter in Chicago in 2017 for about 6 weeks until they drafted Mitchell Trubisky. So Trubisky's seen both sides of this one.
Definitely has. He understands the NFL at this point and who he is as a player and how he's perceived. I'm sure it was almost the opposite. He was probably sitting there at one point going, man, am I going to get this lucky and we're not going to have another quarterback here? Am I going to be the starter? This is amazing. Yes, he understands where he is. After Chicago, he's kind of relegated to backupsville there, like we've talked about. You know, he improved his image. He played good in the preseason. You know, he had a team that is valued as a good offensive football team where, you know, they all looked at him and went, wait, this guy's good. Like, he could play quarterback for us. And that helped his perception around the league. So he's not clueless. He understands that he was going to have to, again, compete to establish himself as that guy once again. And that's what it will take, you know. And he's going to have to fend off the rookie who's, yeah, going to be loved and favored by the fan base to a degree. But, you know, you win some games and you play some good football and you make a few plays here and there, you know, you can win over the fan base to where, you know, at least they're not clamoring for the rookie quarterback to come off the bench on a weekly basis.
And we were talking yesterday about the schedule and how it would work and where
yeah,
it would fit. And I
right.
think someone sent me this. One of the Steelers' offensive linemen made a comment yesterday implying that Trubisky is number one, at least for now. And it would just make sense. You know, teams like to take that young quarterback and drop him down the depth chart to give him a way to earn it, to make him build some confidence. You go from 3 to 2 to 1, and the players see it.
They
That's part
it.
Of it, too. The players
no
have to be on board
yes.
with it. They have to feel that the guy deserves it. You made the point about Kenny Pickett going to Carolina, possibly, and they show up for OTAs, and Sam Darnold is slinging it all over the place, and Kenny Pickett isn't. And guys are like, well, no.
Yeah.
So, you know, in Pittsburgh, Pickett's got to earn it. And that's the bottom line. And Mike Tomlin's not going to screw around with that. You got to earn that job. And if Trubisky's the better option, he'll be the quarterback, plain and simple. Tomlin is going to try to win games. He's going to put the best players on the field at any given time in an effort to win games the way he's always been. It's one of the reasons why he's never had a losing season since he took that job in 2007.
Yeah, there's going to be no BS there. And I look at them as to be like one of those teams that's, yeah, less political maybe than some of the other teams in football. They're not afraid to rip the Band-Aid off, or if they made a mistake, okay, it's not working here, let's play this guy. You know, we've seen that. You know, even hey, they traded up to get Devin Bush, the Michigan linebacker. It hasn't really worked out all that well. He got hurt. That certainly hasn't helped him. But at the same time, they don't double down and go, well, fifth year option because we traded up to get him, and you know, we made him a first round pick and we're going to make that happen. No, you know, that's one example. There's many other examples too of them doing that. So they do what they have to do to win football games. That's the way Mike Tomlin is. And you know, as we've discussed many times before, I mean, they've won games with Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph and guys that are certainly less talented than Mitchell Trubisky. And Trubisky, with the way this offense is, hey, he's definitely a bump up from Ben Roethlisberger last year, like we discussed. And I think he really fits kind of what Matt Canada and the players they have around them, where they want to move the quarterback and do a little quarterback design run and have that to be a part of the threat of what the offense does. You couple that with Trubisky's ability to run, Najee Harris, his ability to run and catch the ball out of the backfield. And then you talk about the two receivers who we talk about a lot, Deontay Johnson and Claypool. They're difference makers. They're guys where you go, oh, man, one-on-one, that's a little scary. I don't know if we want to roll the dice on that too often. So there's stuff there just with Trubisky at quarterback for a guy like Mike Tomlin or anybody that follows Pittsburgh to go, we can make it work with him and we can win games. And with our defense and Pittsburgh and Blitzburg and all that, yeah, I certainly see something there that the recipe could be right there in Pittsburgh for them to be a pain in the butt this year.
Meanwhile, the Steelers have promoted Omar Khan to the position of general manager. He replaces Kevin Colbert, who's had the job for 22 years. He didn't really have the title until 2010, but it was the same job. Khan has been there since 2001. He was most recently VP of football and business administration. I mean, he has been an integral part of that team. And he was one of the names that would come up. And this just gives you an idea of what Bill Cowher thinks of him.
Yeah.
Whenever Cowher was starting to get the band back together again and thinking about getting into coaching, Omar Khan was one of the first names that always came up.
Right.
That he would try to take Omar Khan with him wherever he went. He was going to be the coach of the Jets at one point, but Woody Johnson didn't want to fire Mike Tannenbaum. Cowher wanted to bring in his own guy, and the guy he would have brought in was Omar Khan. So Khan waits patiently, waits for a very long time behind Kevin Colbert, and he gets the job. And Chris, we said this yesterday. Every once in a while, we're right about something. Yeah. My instincts are right about something.
Yeah.
They weren't going outside the building. They were going with somebody who knows how they do things. He's been there 21 years. He knows how they do things. He knows how to operate. Zero ego. Zero ego. I mean, he was there for years before his name ever even began to percolate.
No doubt. Right.
As a potential GM for anyone other than Bill Cowher, not a big self-promoter,
right,
doing his job, happy with the job that he has, yep, not constantly looking for the next job and talking about how I deserve this and how I deserve that. And that's the kind of guy that they were
Pittsburgh.
Looking for.
That's right.
That's who they hire. That's what they do. That's how they've been. It is an ego-free zone. And that made Omar Khan to me, if I would have had to pick a candidate, it would have been him.
Yeah.
And he's the one who got the job.
Yes, 100%. You said it right. I mean, just everything you explained explains the Pittsburgh DNA and why they would want him. And I understand that, as we discussed yesterday. You know, again, they have something good in place there. You don't just throw that overboard for, oh, wait, we like this GM and what they do. Pittsburgh is, you know, tried and true as far as their formula and what they do to evaluate players and build a team. So you don't let that formula out of the building. I mean, that to me is one where, yeah, you continue to ride it. It's still working. You're still relevant on a yearly basis. Man, you're in the Super Bowl conversation. It seems like every 3 or 4 years as well. So that's where I just – there's a handful of teams right now that I think have that – well, you know, for lack of a better way to say it, that front office magic where I just go, yeah, the people that are running it have the magic, but the system they have in place as far as evaluating, evaluating the college, the free agent guys, knowing to, oh, wait, we got an injury. Here's a list of guys to work out and replace that injured guy and everything there. Some teams have cracked the code as compared to others and how they work the front office and what's done there. And you know, you can see that really in the results in the field right now. And Pittsburgh, to me, is one of those teams, along with New England and Baltimore and Kansas City. And, you know, those are the ones at least that jump off to me right off the bat, to where Buffalo right now, certainly, where the team building and the process they have is top-notch, and it's what makes these organizations top-notch right now. Tampa Bay as well.
And I think the reality here is that it makes it far more likely that there will be a continued role for Kevin Colbert. He's been very deferential. He doesn't want to get in the way. He doesn't want to be a problem. He doesn't want to not, you know, he doesn't want to be there if the new GM doesn't want him.
But and makes Omar it easy Khan, if it's
who's
this guy.
Worked yeah. side by side with him for 20 years
right.
and never left in a huff. I can't work with that jerk anymore. No, who would ever say that about Kevin Colbert? I mean, this is the closest thing that they're going to have to continuity if Colbert is involved in some capacity.
Yeah.
He has stepped aside, stepped down, still there. Omar Khan, still there, been there, knows how to make things happen. And they have expanded the, you know, it's not just going to be the same old Andy Weidel or Weidel. This is one of those guys where, like when Roger Goodell became the commissioner, got to be sure we know how to pronounce the last name. Andy Weidel. I'm going with Weidel for now, maybe Weidel, again, to be determined. He's the VP of player personnel in Philly. He's now the assistant GM to Omar Khan. So that's a new hire that was made by the Pittsburgh Steelers to add to this group that has been very steady at the wheel for
Pittsburgh. I mean,
years.
Yeah, and Philadelphia is another one of those places I should have named, right? I mean, they're another one, a team that seems like they've cracked the code a little bit with the front office. It's just that, yeah, so I understand that hire as well. Well, let me bring this guy in. He's good. He came from another place that's very good. Let me see if he throws some ideas or some things there, you know, into our already pretty damn good process and can make it better. So I don't know much about Weidel. Yes.
Weidel. It is
Weidel. Confirmed.
Weidel. Confirmed. Weidel.
But it makes sense.
Andy.
And Weidel. Again, I think it's funny. I mean, you see a lot of the same teams always involved in these GM searches right now. And then a lot of the teams are what we talk about because, yes, owners, people, they look at it and go, wait, there's something they're doing in these certain organizations where they got this process down. Pittsburgh's got it down, and Philadelphia is another one that you look at it and go, wow, they're pretty damn good too.
Andy Weidel, as in, why do those idiots on PFT Live not know how to pronounce my name? But now we do, Andy. We apologize for any confusion. Let's take a break. When we return, Pro Bowl. We're really talking about the Pro Bowl. We have to talk about the Pro Bowl because there's a chance we may never have to talk about the Pro Bowl again. More PFT Live right after this. Message is very clear. If you want to be truly classy, you need a long coat, you need a cane, you need a top hat.
The cane. I'm kind of a fan of the cane. Like, I think I could be one of those older guys that gets around like 60, 58 years old and has like a cool fashionable cane and like some sort of hat. I think I could do that. I think I could pull it off. You know, it helps you with the walking, but more just for the cool look and, like, you know, try to be distinguished and all that.
Well done,
I'm
EJ.
I'm telling you.
First of all, I am not 58.
Let's go with
it. I am 56 for two more weeks, so I'm going to enjoy it because I have a three-month window every year when Shireen is older than me. And I have 3 months to catch up. And then on the back end, my brother-in-law is 3 weeks younger than me, and he lets me hear about it every single day that I'm a year older than him for
right.
those 3 weeks.
Old
so
man.
Let me enjoy the next 2 weeks of 56. And then I have a year to enjoy before 58 is accurate. But that's fine. I'm fine. I can accept the fact that, you know, this is the way it goes. To anybody out there who's young that wants to say, hey, old man, if you're lucky, you will be old someday too. And if you're lucky, you'll get to use the spare Technicolor Dreamcoat from the traveling production of Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, which Kramer was wearing in that clip that we altered to make. I thought of that yesterday, too, when I thought of the cane.
I thought of that because I've been watching Seinfeld again. Right. Like, I'll go through a stretch where I put it on as background noise because I've seen them all so many times. It's just something that's on while I'm working to break the monotony, and you don't want to listen to the news because it's too freaking depressing. So I had that one on the other day. So when you talked about the cane, that was the first
thing
I thought of.
You
so
thought
it's
of?
Perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
Perfect that EJ went there.
Yeah, I can't even remember that episode, but either way, that's what I'm talking about there. There's something to it. I don't know about that coat. I'm not sure if I'm going to be sporting that coat. I'd like something a little more quiet, all right? But that is with the idea of the cane, the hat, cool coat. Well, when I get your age, 58 or so, I can do that for sure.
There were like five different plot lines going on in that episode, as there were in pretty much every episode, and they somehow all tie together at the end. I can tell you everything that happened in that episode because, number one, I just saw it recently, but number two, I've seen it enough times that I could probably rewrite the script from memory. All right, let's move forward. Roger Goodell, yesterday, speaking at the conclusion of the quarterly meetings in May in Atlanta, asked about one of the big topics currently in the NFL, Daniel Snyder, the owner of the Washington Commanders. Here's what Roger Goodell had to say.
Roger, this is the first time we've had a chance to speak to you since the Oversight Committee detailed its financial allegations against Daniel Snyder and the Commanders. What was your reaction to those allegations, and also what's your reaction to the speculation of the possibility of ownership potentially taking a vote to force Daniel Snyder out?
Well, on the last point, I'm not aware of that at all. So I don't respond much to speculation, particularly one that I don't know has any fact basis. On the first one, obviously, I think we've taken all of the allegations seriously. We'll look at them and we'll see if there's any fact basis to any of those.
And as it stands right now, do you sense concern or frustration from your ownership group about Dan Snyder's tenure?
No, I don't. I think those are things that, each individual owner, they have their own opinions on what's happening. I've often said to everyone, including this group, let's wait and get the facts.
And that's the key. Let's wait and get the facts, because before they would make a move against Daniel Snyder, frankly, they would have to be so sure that he has done something so far above and beyond what other owners may have to reasonably worry about being accused of doing themselves that they can get behind making a move against Snyder. Back to July 1 of last year, they covered up the facts that resulted in whatever Snyder's current status is. He's supposedly not on the job, even though he reportedly is on the job, but they weren't protecting him. They were protecting themselves against the possibility of being held to the same standard. That's the key. What he said at the end is critical. The facts will determine this. If they determine that he has done something that is so far beyond what any other owner has ever done or could be accused of doing, that's when he's in peril. He's not at risk if they say, well, we're nervous about applying this standard to him because we don't want it to later
come back
applied
to us.
Yeah. And the other side of it too, Chris, before I take on the fight with Daniel Snyder, I better be damn sure that he's not going to create chaos on his way out the door. What does he know? What could he do? Especially if he is the one, and we don't know this, but people believe he's the one that leaked the John Gruden emails. He has shown that he knows how to create chaos if he wants to. I'd be worried about that if I was one of the other owners, that we're going to have some big mess where he starts airing out all sorts of dirty laundry we'd rather not have out in the public eye.
100%. I don't. This is one where you don't air anything out or do anything like that at all until you got all your ducks in a row and you realize, okay, we got them. Like, he's got issues. We got facts on our side. This is an issue right here, blah, blah, blah. And that's when you do it. But yes, for now, it's speculation, and they got to be careful. They got to tiptoe around this. It's still one of the 32 owners, and he is rich and powerful, and I'm sure can make life very, very hard on the NFL if this fight did get ugly.
And, the ultimate clip to show where things stand for the Commanders, the idea that he's supposedly not running the team, and we show the day that they announced the current name of the franchise, he's the first guy up the steps to the podium, mask off, to make the announcement, even though he's supposedly not involved in the management of the team. The Pro Bowl.
Whoa.
We've come, look, and I'm surprised by the mere existence of a conversation about the future of the Pro Bowl. Because
yeah.
we had kind of come to a clumsy truce where it's two-hand touch in full pads, and that's okay because the players shouldn't be putting themselves at risk. And the NFL's okay with it because they put it on TV and a lot of people watch it and they make money from it. Apparently, it's not okay with the NFL. Here's Roger Goodell from yesterday talking about possible changes to the Pro Bowl.
I think what we tried to lay out is what we've been talking to the NFLPA about, and many of our players individually. I've spoken to several players myself about what works and what doesn't work. I think the conclusion was that the game itself doesn't work and that we needed to find a different way to celebrate our players, celebrate the fact of these being our Pro Bowl players and the best players in our league, and give them an opportunity to celebrate that with our fans. You know, we talked an awful lot about some of the events around the Pro Bowl are really extraordinarily popular, whether it's a quarterback challenge or some of the other events. So those are things that we'll probably build on.
And
that's what I want.
This is one of the rare occasions where the NFL is going to consciously give up a little bit of its scratch here. Right, because I don't care what the alternative is, it's not going to be viewed on TV and consumed the same way a game would be. But the problem is the game is a complete and total embarrassment
right.
to the NFL.
It is.
And there was a time 10 years or so ago where the commissioner was huffing and puffing about it publicly. You know, if this game doesn't improve, we're going to get rid of it. And then you realize, well, it's kind of hard to expect these guys after they've made it through a season healthy enough to play one more game to go beat the crap out of each other
right.
and potentially get themselves injured at a time when we supposedly care about player health and safety. So he backed off. And I think they recognize. They just have to ask themselves, is that 3 hours of, oh, my God, I can't believe that is an NFL football game, is that worth whatever money they're making? And they apparently are coming to the strategic decision that it is not.
Well, like we talk about with players or Deshaun Watson and like the look for the shield and all that. I think you can make that argument here. It doesn't look good on the shield. It doesn't. It's not a good thing for the NFL as a whole. Yeah, like you said, it makes money and people turn on anything NFL no matter what. But overall, I don't think it's a good look for the league. The game is stupid, and it doesn't necessarily celebrate the players. You discussed it too. You know, the play is not going to be anything intense. You know, not like it was when we were growing up or in the 80s when my dad was playing in the game where, like, whoa, if you win, you get $55,000, and I only made $200,000 this year. So $55,000 to the winning team is the winning team on the play, each player is huge money. I'll go out there and hit some people really hard for that kind of money. So that's where it's gone berserk, because a guy that's making $20 million a year is going, $55,000, I might go to the club tonight and have fun and spend $55,000 at the club with my friends and bottles of champagne and whatever. So that's just not going to do it. I am into the skills thing. You've heard, I know we've discussed this. And I would
snoozers.
Like. You, What'd you say?
Snoozers.
Snoozers.
I watched it the first year they did it, and I haven't watched
it. Well, they got to make it better. I mean, it was a crappy way to do it, you know? And then they got to find a way to get the best players in the sport there. We can't have, it's the Pro Bowl, and it's actually the 13th and 14th best quarterbacks in the league here playing because the other top 10 or 12 didn't want to come. So here, this guy's a Pro Bowl quarterback, even though nobody voted for him, and he's here because of cancellations. So that's an issue. Like, why can't, with this current sports book thing, like, in all of that, how come the Caesars can't, you know, sponsor like the long throw quarterback competition, Mahomes or Allen, whoever wins, they get $1 million, or their charity gets $1 million, and the charity representative there is there, so they're going to feel the pressure of trying to win for that person. Oh, here's another event. It's, you know, Derrick Henry versus, you know, Nick Chubb in the quarterback, I mean, the running back, like, run challenge, and they got to go through an obstacle course and do, like, and it's $1 million from DraftKings, and that's where I would like to kind of see it go, at least. I think, or at least that's one that comes to my mind.
Not bad, but still, it's not football.
I know, it's not football.
People want football, and they'll tune in to watch football. The question is, will they tune in for 3 hours on the Sunday between the conference championship games and the Super Bowl for something other than that. And, you know, you make it a big celebration of the players and you have these specific competitions, et cetera, et cetera. Chad Johnson had an idea that I really like. Current Pro Bowlers play against the past era of Pro Bowlers, old school, new school, no pads, flag formatted.
Nobody wants to see old players play flag football. Sorry, Chad Johnson. I like
you. Well, you know what? Let me also say this. Nobody wants to watch flag football.
Exactly.
Nobody's interested in flag football. I know they're trying to make flag football a thing. Nobody's interested in flag football except the people playing it.
Yes.
Frankly.
But, like, can we get, like, who do we look at right now as, you know, again, just to add to it. I mean, I think, if you know, I'd love to see Tyreek Hill versus Ja'Marr Chase and a 100-yard sprint for $1 million or whatever, like, to make it real, to where they don't laugh about it as they run and tire, like, you know. So I would love to see it because there's a lot of talk always that between players. There's been talk of the Mahomes,
you
Allen.
You got to understand, that's how – they love to talk, but they never do it.
I know.
Especially
racing. I don't – yeah, that's where
– I can beat this guy, I can beat that guy, but they never actually
do it. You make it worth their while, they might. There might. Again, to go back to the old days, Darryl Green used to run in that damn thing every year. Why? Because he was like, well, damn, I got to beat a bunch of guys and I get $20,000 for it. That's big money for me at that time.
Question.
Yes. Answer.
I hadn't thought about this until you mentioned taking the $55,000 and going out to the club.
Yeah.
I wonder how much the Alvin Kamara incident, ooh, where he got arrested at the stadium.
Right.
I wonder how much of that influenced the NFL to say, that's just the thing. That you know what? The game stinks. The game's an embarrassment. You throw on top of it that we're creating this platform to bring our players together.
Flirting with danger.
And there's going to be the risk of some sort of incident that results in one of our players getting arrested at the Pro Bowl game itself. Sorry, we're not doing this anymore.
Yeah.
I just can't help but wonder whether that was part of it.
I don't doubt that. It is risky. I mean, I hear you there. I definitely do. For that game, and yes, you know, again, to have it in Vegas probably ups the ante a little bit more. But they got to do something. And it is kind of cool to what you said to start off. I think it's at least interesting that they're admitting it and that something needs to be done, and we'll see where it goes.
Before we go, we have to at least wax nostalgically about the one and only in the past 30 years significant moment from the Pro Bowl when Brian Moorman decided to take off with a fake punt and Sean Taylor decided to stop him from getting the first down. Good Lord! I mean, that is a wicked hit in the most intense regular season or postseason game you could ever see. I still,
and
there
perfect
it is.
Hit. Like shoulder, no head.
Unbelievable.
I mean, it was put it on a reel. Yeah, to teach it to the players. But yeah, that's there's a good reason why punters don't want to perform in the Pro Bowl.
Yeah. Let's take a break. Matt LaFleur may not be happy that Aaron Rodgers isn't at OTAs, but Jordan Love definitely is. We'll discuss that next here on this Wednesday edition of PFT Live.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Yeah, he's not here.
You don't expect him till mandatory minicamp?
Yeah, I would say that I talked to him last night for a while, which is great, just to kind of update him on just where we are and go over a few, like we do every off season. There's always tweaks to what you're doing, but no, he's in great spirits, and it was a great conversation, but yeah, I wouldn't anticipate seeing him at least this week.
Is there a possibility next week, or do you think it's not?
Yeah, I think it's all on him. I mean, it's voluntary, so.
And look, it is voluntary. We talked about this yesterday, and everybody who isn't there has a reason to be there, although Aaron Rodgers really doesn't have a reason to not be there. All the guys we talked about yesterday have financial reasons, strategic reasons to not be there. Aaron Rodgers doesn't really have a reason to not be there. And, Chris, did it strike you as odd that Matt LaFleur used the phrase great spirits? That to me, and and I don't know how much thought he put into it.
I know what you're
saying. But that's a word. That's a word that you use where, you know, I expect the guy to be pissed off. I expect him to be down in the dumps. I expect him to not be happy. But he's in great spirits.
I mean, I hear. I mean, yes, as talking heads on TV, we look into those comments a little bit, as into like, yeah, you're referring to the fact that, wait, maybe you didn't think he was going to be in great spirits, or was
yeah, you're surprised
that he was, yes, bothered by, like, aka Davante Adams isn't on the team anymore. But I mean, again, does he need to be there like we discussed? No. We know. I mean, he can play ball. He's at a point of his career where it's no issue. But as we discussed, you know, leading up and when Davante Adams left town and all that, you know, first off, you're coming. I just want to say, like, I mean, you're coming down the home stretch here of your career. There's new moving parts. There's new people on your offense. You know, I would think you'd want to make it work and get that work in. You know, again, is it a necessity? No. Do I think it would help? Yes, I do. Not only yourself, but, you know, other players on your football team as well. Again, I don't mean to be annoying, but I always point to, you know, Brady in this equation. You know, Brady's throwing with the receivers at 7:30 every morning. You talk to anybody down in Tampa, that's what's going on. Tony Dungy's discussed it, whatever. And he doesn't have, you know, a new number one target or some young guys that he's got to bring along here. And that's where I just, yeah, as a guy that's the quarterback, the franchise, the leader of the team, the guy that's paid the most, I would want that guy in the building. Sorry, I would.
Especially with all the turmoil in the receiver position. You got to get guys up to speed, and you're not there to help get them up to speed and get yourself up to speed with these new receivers. Jordan Love, here is the de facto number one quarterback with Rodgers not there, talking about the situation.
What are your thoughts on Aaron Rodgers not being here? Do you kind of wish he was here? And how often do you guys communicate?
I think that's Aaron's game plan is to, you know, he doesn't really need this time right now. So I enjoy it, him not being here. It just means more reps for me, more reps for everybody else in the quarterback room. So obviously I'm loving it.
What was your reaction when you heard about Aaron's extension?
Yeah, I mean, I was super happy for Aaron. Obviously, you know, the dude deserves it, obviously, what he's done the last 2 years. But, you know, personally for me, it's just means that, you know, I'm about to be a backup again for this year. And that's all I can control right now. But, you know, I was happy for Aaron, but at the same time, it's like, you know.
Look, this is an opportunity.
Good for him for being honest there.
And they are not going to trade Jordan Love. They're going to keep him. He's too cheap. Backup quarterbacks are expensive. You get a guy on the back end of a rookie deal, it's cheap. He knows the system. They need him there in case he gets injured. And, yeah, this is an opportunity. If you're not going to get to play, you may as well get the reps wherever you can. So good for Jordan Love that he understands the opportunity and he's making the most of it. And it's just a shame. He, as I've said before, he's the only guy I feel bad for in the entire drama that's happened in Green Bay the last 2 years because he's the only one who didn't choose it.
Yeah. No, it's a tough situation for him. I do feel for the young man as well. I do. I mean, again, it's hard what he has to deal with mentally. You know, physically, yeah, he's a raw guy that's got some talent. And, you know, just it's okay. When am I going to get a chance to really grow it, show it? So that's great. He gets the reps and all that, certainly. But, I mean, I think he gave you his real answer there at the end. Like, yeah, it's happy. That's the way you are in the NFL. I mean, you're happy for that other player. But at the same time, you're going, oh, man, I guess I'm not going to be playing for this team for the next 2 years. That's not happening. I definitely won't be on the field. I'm not going to be the starter. And he's in a very, very tough situation. And you can say what you want. I mean, it's a first-round pick who's not getting a chance to develop on the football field. And is not going to get a chance throughout his rookie contract, barring an injury. It's the only way he's going to. So it stinks for Green Bay that way, too. It stinks for him. Green Bay wasted a first-round pick on a quarterback that is probably not going to be on the field until year 5 or 6 of his career.
I wonder, see, next year, do they consider trading? They're going to have to pick up the option or not. Do you pick up the fifth-year option on Jordan Love?
No.
When he hasn't played at all?
No. I don't think so, and I don't think that'll help his value if you did want to trade for him or trade him or do anything like that either. You know, that would hurt it. So I don't think you pick up that fifth year option. I don't think you do. I don't think you can be like stuck with that number with just in case something bad happens.
I don't know what the number will be because he hasn't played. It's now influenced by how much you play, but it's still a significant number.
Yeah.
But yeah, look, from the Packers standpoint, they have to ask themselves, how much longer is Aaron Rodgers really going to be here? Do we still intend to transition to Jordan Love, or do we want to go in a different direction? So all to be determined by the Green Bay Packers. When we return, to be determined by the San Francisco 49ers, Jimmy Garoppolo's future. Kyle Shanahan addressed it yesterday. They're going to be trading Jimmy Garoppolo, unless, of course, they aren't. We'll let you hear what Kyle had to say next here on PFT Live.
Yeah, nothing's changed since the surgery. You know, we were where we were at before that, and then he got the surgery, so everything went on hold. I expect him at some time, most likely to be traded, but who knows? It's not a guarantee, and it's been exactly on hold when that happened, and when he's healthy, we'll see what happens.
Most likely is a strong term. I expect him most likely to be traded. The problem is they value him more than anyone else does. They have inflated what they think he's worth, and they are dismayed that no one else seems to agree. Well, you're the ones that went out and used three first-round picks to get his replacement, so what do you expect others to think? For the same reasons you don't want him, maybe we're not interested in paying him $25 million with no guarantee beyond this year. We pay him $25 million. Maybe he won't earn it, and if he does, what do we do next year? Franchise tag him? So it's just a tough spot for everybody, but look, the bottom line is it sure sounds like they want to move forward with Trey Lance.
100%.
They don't know whether or not he's ready, but they want to move forward with Trey Lance. And I don't know how you can go forward with both guys on the roster after Kyle has said something that clear, openly and publicly. If they don't get the trade partner they want, at what point does Jimmy Garoppolo go to them and say, "You tried, it didn't work. Can you just let me go now while I have a chance to go find another job instead of letting me go right before the start of the season and I can't find anything and I have nothing and I have no guarantees?"
Yeah, no, it's. I mean, you know, we've gotten a lot of inklings. I mean, they want to go Trey Lance. We know it for obvious reasons, let alone, you know, we heard at the owners' meetings where Shanahan, we think Trey Lance is ready to be a starter. He said it there. You know, again, yesterday saying that, you know, yes, we think we're going to trade him, all that. The one thing I will say, you know, that I think has jumped out to me, because I believe this is really like the second time in the past week that Shanahan has made some comments about Garoppolo in this, is a little bit of just the, you know, the more you kind of look at this, you realize that, man, maybe they were closer to trading him. And that's when Garoppolo was like, I'm getting surgery. You're not having the power in this situation. That to me is the one thing I've looked at to go, it seems like that kind of annoyed them or has bothered them in this situation. That Garoppolo went the surgery route, that certainly threw a wrench in their plans and has halted the process. And ultimately, I think is going to, you know, like you're kind of talking about, end the process altogether. Yes, you value him too highly. Yes, he's coming off of shoulder surgery. And yes, he's due to make $25 million a year. And most of the seats are filled. I just don't think there's going to be that much action for Jimmy Garoppolo.
And despite the 49ers talking point that has gotten pushed to multiple members of the media who just parroted it like Woody the cowboy with a pull string, "There's a snake in my boot. Jimmy's a great guy. Jimmy's a great guy." He went and got shoulder surgery without telling them. He did it on his own. He threw a wrench into the gears. And that's him taking back some of the power here.
Right.
He said it himself to Adam Schein several weeks ago. It was strange last year, and he wouldn't wish it on anybody. George Kittle explained how weird it was and how well Jimmy did in being a professional about it, and how he admires him for doing it, and it continues to ingratiate himself even more with his teammates. This is Jimmy G taking back some of the power and saying, "You're not going to just, you know, treat me like a pawn on a chessboard. I got some of the power here too," and that's got to be factored into all of this. So I think they're going to have a hard time trading him, harder than they realize.
Yeah, I do too. And then I also think that the fact that Baker Mayfield's out there, you know, as possible trade bait as well, does not help out Jimmy Garoppolo. Wait, let me think. $25 million for Jimmy Garoppolo or $18 million for Baker Mayfield, who's young and just about to hit the prime of his career and has more physical ability than Jimmy Garoppolo. Who would you rather trade for? That's going to hurt Garoppolo thing as well.
I think they're not doing anything for now because they don't have to. But as we get closer to camp, they're going to have to do something. By the way, before we take a break, Kyle Shanahan did address the Deebo Samuel situation. He is confident that they'll come to an agreement. It further underscores the idea that this is all financial, that this isn't Deebo Samuel not wanting to play for the 49ers, not wanting to live in California. This is just about, are they going to pay him what he thinks he's worth? That's Kyle's perspective. Could be right, could be wrong. But Chris, he continues to be optimistic they're going to work something out.
Yeah, no, he does. You're right. And it seems like, you know, again, like we discussed yesterday, that Deebo is maybe cooled down a little bit. I don't think we really all, any of us, know the truth of this situation and what's going on. But Shanahan, like we've discussed, he's got a way with players, and I never thought he would give up on this one, especially with Deebo Samuel, who's arguably the best player on their team.
All right, let's take a break. When we return, some interesting comments from Tyreek Hill regarding his new quarterback.
That's his quarterback.
Discuss that to wrap up this Wednesday edition of PFT.
But that's my quarterback.
I mean, it's nothing weird. You know, at first I thought it was going to be something crazy, the ball going all over the place, but Tua actually has, you know, probably one of the prettiest balls I've ever caught in my life. So it's very catchable. I don't want to continue, because the more I talk, the more it sounds weird. So Tua is a very accurate quarterback. That's all I'm going to say. I just feel like football is all about confidence, you know, and I'm very confident in my quarterback, you know. So I just feel like, you know, if I'm able to, like, help him get all the confidence in the world and push other guys to push that confidence into him, then the sky's the limit for the guy. You know, because he's a heck of a talent, you know, has crazy arm strength, arm talent, you know. So, like I say, man, we're all excited, you know, just to watch him sling the ball each and every day.
You know, I'm reminded of a scene in Seinfeld, since we talked about it earlier in the program, where George and Jerry are at a diner, and George is trying to interpret the potential flirtations of the waitress with him, and Jerry points out, well, they do work on tips. And you know, Tyreek Hill wants Tua Tagovailoa to throw him the football. He wants to have the right relationship with him. And I thought it was a little strange. Pete caught this early. To say, at first I thought it was going to be something crazy, the ball going all over the place. Why did you think that, Tyreek? I'd have loved to have heard that follow-up. Why did you think that it was going to be crazy, the ball going all over the place?
That's where I think them continuing to address this is making it look weirder and more awkward. The fact that he put a social media out, the video last week to basically dispel the video the week before that everybody was making a big deal about with Tua. To me, they're pouring gasoline on the fire. And the more he talks, the more it, you know, he even said it. I got to stop because it sounds weird. You know, just, hey, the guy looks good in practice. He's throwing the ball good. Everybody needs to back the hell off. This game's about confidence, and we got his back. That's all easy we said.
In 5 years with the Chiefs, he never had to say it once about Patrick Mahomes. What does that tell you?
Yeah, right.
We're done.
Very
true. See
you
tomorrow.
See ya.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.